I like to say that to my students that radiographs are the Instagram of endodontics. There are things that appear to be that are not. And we have limitations because the radiograph is just a shadow. It shows you the superimposition of the structures. And when we move to the electronic method, we are considering the three dimensions of our tooth, of our canal.
Welcome to Austin, Texas, and welcome to the Phil Klein Dental Podcast. Thank you for joining us. For those of us who perform endodontic therapy, we know that accurate working length determination sits at the core of predictable, high-quality outcomes. In this episode, we'll explore why precise working length is so critical and how the quote-unquote working length 4D concept is shifting the way clinicians think about endodontics and what emerging endodontic technologies are bringing to everyday practice. Our guest today is Dr. Lucilla Piasecki. She's an endodontist, researcher, and clinical associate professor of endodontics at the University at Buffalo, New York since 2016. So if you're performing or assisting in endodontic procedures, I'm hoping that this episode will offer you valuable insight into the tools, innovations, and future directions shaping modern endodontic care. Before we bring in our guest, I do want to say that if you're enjoying these episodes and want to support the show, please follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You'll be the first to know about our new releases, and our entire production team will really appreciate it. Dr. Piasecki, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with a very fundamental question, and that is, why is establishing an accurate working length so critical in endodontic therapy?
First of all, this is a topic that I'm passionate about, but also it's proven scientifically that it's one of the most critical steps in our endodontic therapy. So we think of the working length as the boundary line that tells us exactly how far our procedures of cleaning, disinfecting, and filling should go as far inside the canal. So this ideal point is not arbitrary. It should be as close as possible of the apical constriction, because this narrow diameter that's usually very close to the apical foramen is the optimal point for wound healing. So we can have our periapical tissues promoting the healing in the periapical area.
A good point that you made is that clinically, that target is at or very near the apical constriction, but not necessarily the radiographic apex, right? So that's really important for our audience to, I'm sure they all know this. Most of them are doing endodontics, but you know, you hold up a radiograph, and at least in my day, we used to hold up a radiograph. Now it's on a screen. But a lot of dentists thought the radiographic apex was where you wanted to go to, but it's really not. It's the apical constriction, which is not necessarily determined by a radiograph, correct?
Yes, precisely. And actually, even before radiographs, when the dentists were using only the tactile sense to try to find this end of the root canal. So the importance is, if we go beyond the constriction, we are pushing debris, irrigants, or filling materials, and we can damage the periapical tissues, or mainly if you're close to important anatomical structures. So we are trying to prevent this irritation and even like post-op pain and improve healing. Because when you have an overextension, you might delay healing. And of course, we don't want to be short to the apical constriction, because this will compromise our disinfection of the root canal treatment.
So what's particularly interesting is the way they teach endodontics today versus the past. I think more and more it's encouraged that the dentist confirms his or her working length throughout the procedure. So it's more than just determining your working length in the beginning, but it's confirming it as you move along. And you refer to that as working length 4D. Tell us what that means and how it affects clinical outcome.
Okay, Phil. So this is a concept that I try to reframe how we think about working length. And thinking about what you said, how we used to do before. So if you're thinking only about the vertical component, if you're using a paper point, or your tactile sense, you're only going for the vertical, just one dimension. When we added the radiographic films for working lengths, we are working with those two dimensions, right, of her film. And we have limitations because the radiograph is just a shadow, is just a superimposition. It shows you the superimposition of the structures. And when we move to the electronic method, we are considering the three dimensions of our tooth, of our canal, because we have that method considering all the anatomy of that canal to find the apical constriction. But then the fourth dimension is time, because our working length shouldn't be measured just in the beginning of our treatment, because we have sufficient data to show that we have changes in the working length as we proceed with our preparation of the root canals.
Why does it change? Because I know when I did root canal in the old days, we located a cusp that was fairly stable. That cusp tip was not going anywhere, and the rubber stop would land on that cusp as our reference. And if it was 23 millimeters, after we determined what our working length was, that's where it stayed, 23 millimeters. And I didn't really go do another working length again. But you're saying that this is kind of a moving target over time, and that's where the term working length 4D comes in. It's that fourth dimension of time that's changing. So why is that?
Well, actually, the target's the same, is the apical constriction. What changes is our trajectory to get there. So I notice a lot of clinicians, they like to access the tooth and place a file, feel that they have patency, and take their working length either with apex locators or radiographs. But after you complete your access, you remove coronal interferences, mainly if you're using an orifice shaper, creating your glide path, you will slightly change the trajectory, and your working length has a tendency to reduce. Sometimes it's 0.2 millimeters, 0.4. Sometimes we cannot even detect clinically if you're just using a clinical ruler. But that degree of shift depends on many factors. For example, the more curved the canal is, the more you enlarge, more taper you give to that canal, the more you enlarge that canal, the more the length can change. Also, the instrument type, if you're using more rigid instruments, you will end up straightening more that canal. And as we know, the shorter distance between two points is a straight line. So if your canal to begin with was curved or double curved, as you prepare your root canal, you might have these slight changes in the working length. And it's interesting because in the same tooth, so we've done a couple of studies. So, for example, mandibular molar, in the distal canal, you will not see much of change in the length from when you start to your completion of your preparation. But in a mesial buccal canal or a mesiolingual canal with double curve, you might have slight changes over your orifice shaper, coronal preparation, apical preparation that might add up to 0.8, 0.9 millimeters. So it's almost a full millimeter reduction in your working length. And the fact that this is happening and you cannot predict leads us to the 4D concept that is monitoring those changes, monitoring your working length. You just use your apex locator, you can keep the leaf clip there. And as you go, after a couple of files, you double check, because if anything happened and you have your instrumentation went beyond the foramen, you can always adjust and prevent a
Yeah.
overextension of your obturation.
So, given that we talked about the working length 4D concept, which means that over the period or over the course of the instrumentation process, the dentist should be recalibrating their working length using an electronic apex locator. And we'll talk about one that's really, really good in a few moments. But considering that most dentists are still using 2D radiographs, digital radiographs, but it's not CBCT. A lot of them just say, hey, I go a half a millimeter off the radiographic apex and I should be pretty close to what is the actual apical constriction. What do you say to that?
So that's a very interesting point because when you are using just a radiographic image, I like to say that to my students that radiographs are the Instagram of endodontics. There are things that appear to be that are not. So when you look at a 2D image of the tooth, you have the superimpositions, you don't know, you cannot assess the volume, the depth. Most of cases, you cannot see where is the apical foramen unless it's in the mesial or distal aspect. And still, if you could see the apical foramen, you still don't know where is the apical constriction. So what we know from the anatomy studies using micro-CT, using microscopic techniques, is that in most of cases, mainly for posterior teeth, the apical foramen does not coincide with the root apex. So you have this variation, and when you look at some studies from Cutler and some other studies that didn't use micro-CT, the 0.5 millimeters, it's from the foramen, not from the apex and not from the radiographic apex. It could be anywhere from 0 to more than 2 millimeters.
So it's between 0 and 2 millimeters. The working length could vary from the actual radiographic apex.
Yes, in some cases, even more. There's some studies that for molars, MB2 canal in molars, the distance from the apical constriction to the radiographic apex, it could be even more than 2 millimeters.
Wow, so
And
that's a big deal. So that means that if you're working off the radiographic apex, you're overfilling.
yes.
In most cases, you're overfilling the canal, which we talked about in the beginning. That's dangerous because you're pushing debris into the osseous area, the attachment apparatus, and that's going to be certainly minimally an inflammatory response, and it could lead to worse than that, which could spread the infection if you have a necrotic pulp with lots of bacteria in it. So there's no question that using an apex locator is very, very important, and not only in the beginning of the procedure, but as you mentioned, over time with that concept of working length 4D. So I want to ask you, Dr. Piasecki, you've been a big fan of the J. Morita Root ZX, and now they have a newer version. It's been out for a couple of years, maybe not that long, but the Root ZX3, which has the ability to have this high frequency module attached to it. And we'll talk about that shortly. And I think in the endodontic community, if not the entire dental profession, the J. Morita Root ZX3 has become the gold standard in apex locators. Tell us why you rely on it so much, and what is it about the Root ZX3 that is really bringing such attention to it in the field of endodontics?
Yeah, so you're completely right. Root ZX really is the gold standard, not only in the industry, but also for research. And the reputation is because of the functioning method. So it uses two frequencies and calculates the ratio of the impedance inside the canal. So all these complicated words are to explain that this device will use an electrical circuit to evaluate the anatomy of the canal. And when it reaches the apical constriction, it can sign gives you the sign that this is the narrowest part of the canal, and can also tells you when your file is in the exit of the canal. That probably and hopefully is the apical foramen and not a perforation, for example.
When I was in dental school, we used apex locators. And when I was in practice, we used apex locators. Now, there were some false positives when it came to fluid in the canal and that kind of thing. How has that improved now over the years?
So the method that Root ZX is using, because it has these two frequencies of alternate current, it's stable in most of the environments, regardless of the type of irrigants, file systems, operators, and pulp of diagnosis. And many studies confirm the accuracy between 85% or almost 100% within half millimeter tolerance. So it's clinically proven to be efficient, and you can use to locate the apical foramen, the exit of the canal, if you're trying to find your patency. And you can also use to establish your apical limit of preparation when you are locating the apical constriction. So the Root ZX has become this benchmark gold standard to which we evaluate any other devices in the market or any other situations. If you want to compare a different irrigant solution, you will always rely on Root ZX as your standard.
So if you would, Dr. Piasecki, walk us through the workflow of how you would integrate the Root ZX3 into the endodontic procedure. So begin with, you know, the pre-op film and move through it. Also talk about how you want to continually confirm the working length.
Okay, so when you have your first image of the patient, you have a periapical radiograph. So that's when you have your pre-op length, or we can use that estimated working length. And since you mentioned before, if you do have a CBCT that was taken for diagnostic purpose, you can also measure the canal using the CBCT. It's actually, there's studies showing that measuring the pre-op working length from the CBCT is more accurate than only in a 2D radiograph, because you're considering the volume, right? Then you proceed for root canal access, and if the dentist wants to check patency or to double check if the file is inside the canal, so they can use the apex locator at this point to go to the apex mark, the first pink mark, and then you know that that's your patency. And then as you start to prepare your canal orifice shaper, you are removing dentin and you are straightening a little bit that canal. So you could use your apex locator again to find your apical constriction and establish your working length. And as you progress, I always tell my students that after I reach a size 25, it doesn't matter which type of file or which type of rotary you're using, it's always good to double check, because at that point, you probably removed most of the pulp tissue. And 0.25 millimeters is the average size of apical constriction, even for molars, according to some micro-CT studies. So you still have the chance to fix or adapt your working length at that point, if anything is not according to plan. But the interesting part about the Root ZX3 is that it has a separate module that you can attach to your apex locator, and it helps to remove that pulp tissue. So you can use, they call a high frequency conduction, and you can use this electromagnetic pulse to disrupt the pulp tissue. So this will help you achieve a better or more stable electronic reading of the apex locator function.
So it actually causes electromagnetic disruption in some fashion of the lateral canals and deeper down into the more constricted area of the root canal system, and helps us flush out the debris. Is that the way it's supposed to work?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, I just read. I mean,
you explained.
Yeah. Well, I talked to the company, the research and developers, and I talked to some of the endodontists that use it, and that's how I remember them explaining to it. I've never used it because I don't do root canals anymore. I do podcasts. I'm not sure which ones I like more, doing the root canals or doing the podcast, but eventually I'll decide.
I prefer the root canals for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. So is that something that you recommend with the ZX3, or is that just kind of a luxury item? I mean, is that something that you find hugely clinically beneficial to you as far as removing debris from difficult areas and kind of cauterizing the tissue so that it could be flushed out, not only to get a better length or more accurate length recording, but also just in the process of instrumentation and disinfection?
Yeah, that's a very good point. So this HF module is, as we discussed before, is an add-on to the Root ZX3. And what it does, it transforms pure apex locator into a combined measurement and therapeutic unit, because it will use high frequency energy that works similar to a electrosurgical unit. So you will use those pulses to cuts of tissue and coagulation of soft tissue. And in fact, it comes with tips that you can use for a small gingivectomy, for example, if you need that. But what's interesting for endodontics is that it was designed to work within the dentinal walls. So it comes with tips that are partially coated, and you can use those files or tips to create a target vaporization or ablation, those words. I like to use cauterization, it's easier to understand. So you can cut organic tissues, pulp, for example. You can disrupt small debris, biofilm, even remaining gutta percha after the removal of the bulk gutta percha retreatments. So this tool is very interesting because it will help you to clear the path for your apex locator to work. And because they are integrated, you can do both at the same time. The only add-on is a pedal switch to activate the HF module.
The way you explain it is very clear because I know that when I practiced endodontics, often I would be instrumenting the tooth. And even further into it, maybe 50% into my instrumentation, there was still some spongy, resistant, soft tissue that just clung to the side of the dental wall deep down, most likely attached to a lateral canal and had some foundational attachment in there, which was very hard to get out and frustrating. This particular addition to the Roots EX3 seems to have handled that. Like you mentioned, there's a cauterization process that actually cauterizes the tissue and then it flushes out much more seamlessly, which is really the goal here. So it seems to me what the Roots EX3 is doing with the HF module for the cost of it, and I think it's maybe, I don't know, $3,000, that's almost similar to what the purpose of a laser that would cost $80,000. An erbium-YAG laser is also used to disrupt biofilm and disrupt tissue through the bubbling effect that it produces when you put the tip in there. Are we getting similar results with the HF module as you would with possibly a laser?
I believe so. And I believe there's a potential to improve not only for the working length, but to just disrupt pulp tissue, biofilm, and control bleeding. So, because it cauterizes. So, if you have a case that's you have inflamed tissue or bleeding inside the canal, so using the HF module, it will coagulate to stabilize the bleeding, which is a plus for working length determination because excessive bleeding, excessive exudate might interfere with the performance of your apex locator. So the HF module will help by removing debris, helping to cauterize and remove pulp tissue, and also in the process, helping with the disinfection. We do have some studies in animals showing that HF has the ability to remove tissue from accessory canals, from lateral canals. And even there's a clinical study showing that it can act even in non-instrumented areas.
Yeah, see
So,
that's a big thing because, there's dentists that I know that work in remote areas where the closest endodontist is 35, 40 miles away. That's the closest. In some areas, I have friends where they say that it's a 4-hour drive, 4 hours just to get to an endodontist. So rather than have a dentist, a general dentist, extract a molar because the patient doesn't want to go 4 hours each way to the endodontist, and they go, "Listen, doctor, just take it out." The dentist will have a laser there, and they'll spend $100,000 for a laser because they feel like they could be more successful with molar root canal because they have now a tool that could help with the disinfection of tiny calcified small canals that molars usually present to the operator. But with this HF module, like I mentioned, it's 3 grand. I think it's $3,000, maybe less. I don't know what the cost is now. Everything goes down over time, I guess, as more and more people adopt to that new technology. But to me, it's a no-brainer for someone who's in a remote area. And again, or if you're a general dentist who's doing molar root canal, or an endodontist who's doing molar root canal and doesn't have a laser or just wants to augment their standard operating protocol, which is, you know, instrumentation, irrigation, and so forth. So it sounds like it's a really good adjunct, and that's probably why they developed it, right? I mean, they knew what was missing in the armamentarium of the dentists that are doing these more difficult cases.
Yeah, so as we were discussing, the Root ZX was already the gold standard for apex locator, but some of clinical situations would cause interference in the apex locator itself, regardless of the brand. So when we had canals with excessive bleeding, with blockage by debris or gutta percha, so this was interfering with the electric flow of the apex locator. As a researcher about apex locators, when I saw Root ZX3, I was very happy to know that there was this strategy, HF, that could improve the accuracy of the working length measurements. However, this high frequency module has so many other
benefits,
advantages.
Yeah. So yeah. It's interesting, yeah. Because so they kind of developed it, it sounds like what you're describing, to help ascertain the working length in environments where it was more challenging, right? Because the things that interfered with an accurate working length determination was eliminated with this high frequency electromagnetic impulse that would get down there and help the doctor take out the debris. Therefore, they can get a more accurate working length. But in essence, it's not only doing that, you're saying, it's also helping with the whole disinfection irrigation process.
Exactly. And the good thing about using the Root ZX3 is that you don't have an extra device. So you don't need you don't have a new learning curve. You don't need another setting in your chair. You still have the same familiar Root ZX style interface. So it's very very easy to implement and start using. And it doesn't affect the workflow because you're already using the apex locator.
Another interesting benefit, Dr. Piasecki, that we talked about offline was pain control. Tell us about that.
Well, since the HF module will disrupt the pulp tissue, you can go down about like 4 millimeters, maybe inside the pulp tissue, and you deliver a pulse in a specific setting, which is not very strong, but enough to cause a numbness of the pulp tissue. And you will also coagulate, remove, and it's way more less painful for the patient.
Yeah, well, it's certainly less invasive than an intrapulpal.
Yeah, so for the cases when you have that inflamed pulp that the patient's feeling, and you consider using an intrapulpal anesthesia, so let's think that for the intrapulpal anesthesia, you need the back pressure. And sometimes if you're early on, you don't have all your access done, or even if you're already inside the canals, it might be very hard to achieve that back pressure or have enough space for you to use your needle. So with this unit, you will use the probes or the tips that come with the HF, which is very small, size of a file. So it's easy to place them inside the pulp tissue. You will use one pulse, it's 1 second. It will coagulate the tissue and instantaneously causing the anesthesia. So because you're technically removing, cauterizing the tissue. So it's convenient and easier on the patient in case of pain, even after a block, if you have inflamed a hot tooth. And there's also one study showing that reduces the post-op pain.
By what mechanism would that work? Just by the fact that the tissue is being cauterized at the time the treatment is being done?
Yes, not only for the cauterization, but also you will be removing, getting rid of tissue, and you will have less debris inside the canal. And don't forget that we will also have a better working length determination.
Right. Well, that's
So
the see
everything
that
comes together.
yeah. See, that's really what I think it comes down to. The fact that you've got a much more accurate working length determination probably precludes over instrumenting in more cases. So therefore, the postoperative pain or postoperative sensitivity is less, just for the fact that you're not manipulating the tissue outside of the root canal system. The idea is to minimize over instrumentation by getting a really accurate working length. So, as we wrap up this podcast, Dr. Piasecki, and it was very interesting talking with you, what would you recommend to our dentists that are listening to this program about endodontic success? What would you tell them if they were in your endodontic bay right now in the clinic where you teach, as like a encouraging pregame pep talk about what they should be doing in order to maximize their clinical outcomes with their endodontic cases?
My closing remarks are always back to basics. We need to remember anatomy. I teach entire anatomy to the students in the first when they're first years, and then when they're in clinic, they're like, "Oh, I don't remember that." I said, "Yep, let's go back to the basics." So always be mindful of anatomy. Try to understand the principles of functioning not only of your apex locator but any device that you're using, because if any challenges appear or if you encounter any challenges, as long as you understand why you're doing that procedure and how to use your tool, you will be able to overcome or most likely understand or find a solution or an alternative. So anatomy, understand your tools, and trust your apex locator because
No, that's
they
excellent.
work.
Yeah, that's excellent advice, and we're hearing that, ladies and gentlemen, from a researcher and an endodontist. But I think that's what you said, Dr. Piasecki, applies to many, many things. That if you understand the foundational basis for what you're doing, then you could become a problem solver when the problem arises, rather than following a cookbook and saying first we do this, then we do that, then we do that, because most of your cases could go pretty well, but when you run into a problem, if you don't understand the basics, like you said, anatomy is key for root canal therapy for sure. Thank you very much. Have a great evening and enjoy your trip to Brazil.
Thank you for having me.